Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to the podcast. This is episode number 61 of the car wash. And we are celebrating Sokola Juma's 24th birthday, 24 years of passion we celebrate today, of the nation's leading soccer publication, in fact, the continent's leading soccer publication. On today's show, we're going to preview the Soweto Derby. We're going to chat about this TTM ownership change. We're going to discuss the situation regarding Yosef Zinbauer, who is apparently skating on thin ice at Pirates despite ending their trophy drought. But of course, I am your host, Slu Paho, and whether you are listening to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Mahikeng 96.7 FM's Game Time, welcome to the show. I'm, of course, not alone. I am joined by former Ajax Cape Town and Mamelodi Sundowns goalkeeper, Mr. Sean Roberts. How are you doing today?
Yes, Slu Dog. Fantastic. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. And we are also joined by former Bafana Bafana, Sundowns and Pirates midfielder, Mr. Deko Mudise. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Anislu.
I'm doing fantastic. You know, it's funny times that we're living in, and I think it's only right and fitting that for funny times, we bring funny jokes.
Yay.
But I don't know if Sean's got any of those lined up for us today.
Well, that's not going to happen, is it, Slu? But this one's for Teko. He might get this one. Why did the man name his dogs Rolex and Timex? Because they were watchdogs.
My brain clicked as soon as you...
That's lame.
It's so good, bro. So good.
Watchdogs. Oh, man. Wow. Well, if you're heading to the stores today, keep a watch out for that newspaper section. Because as we celebrate 24 years, it's a great paper today. We previewed the Soweto Derby. We're going to discuss that later on in the show. They also discussed Ronaldo becoming the all-time record goal scorer. There's a great feature about how Pizzo is apparently still chasing Billiat. It's great. So as we celebrate 24 years of Sokola Juma, as former players yourselves, I thought I'd just quickly put you guys on the spot and ask you if you guys remember the first time La Duma either interviewed you or your first interactions with La Duma. So, you know, I might be throwing you under the bus here. I didn't tell you I'd ask you this, but Sean, do you remember the first time you interacted with La Duma as a publication?
I can't remember the first time, Slu, but I do remember meeting the big man, Clint Roper, years and years and years ago. I'm not too sure how long Clint has been there, but it must be over 8 to 10 years, because that's when I remember being... I don't know if I was interviewed or we just met up, but it's nice to see him climb the ranks now. Now he's the big boss, but yeah, I mean, La Duma has been part of my journey for as long as I can remember. I mean, I see they're 24, so it must be my whole career, basically. I can't believe 24 years old. That's ridiculous, man. Time flies, eh?
It truly, truly does. I mean, I'm busy. So I'm sitting here thinking I was, what, 3-4 years old when the first issue of La Duma was printed, and now they're still going.
How much were they? Do you know how much they were when they first came out?
I don't know.
150. I don't know.
Inflation is crazy these days, right?
R5.
Deco, what was your first interaction with La Duma, if you remember?
Still, to be honest, I don't remember. I think I was at SuperSport though. 2006 or 2007, somewhere there. For me, I think it was exciting because we grew up reading the paper and we knew the profiles of the players because of Sokola Duma itself. So one being there and being profiled, I think it was a big thing for me, you know. It gave me that thing that, okay, somebody is actually recognizing. And that also gives players a platform as well to be seen and recognized and to be known as well.
That's so a good point. That's a good point, yeah. You're right.
So I think it was very exciting for me because I remember as well when I was still in school, you know, we used to buy the publication and we'd read about the players. And if there's one of those big pictures, you know, of your favorite player, will cut it out. And you have it in your in your room or something like that. So for me to have that big picture in Sokala Duma, I think it was one of the first pictures that I cut out for myself. I don't know where that picture is because I thought that was the last time.
You still got it.
No, but I thought at the time, I thought it was the last time. Because you at the time when I came in, there was a lot of players. So you actually don't know whether you'll be interviewed again or you have that opportunity again. So the first one is always the one to remember, and that's what I did.
Yeah. You know, from my side, you know, La Duma, there were certain uncles of mine. This was the only thing I remember them ever reading. And my cousins, some of them had the cutout pictures that Zach was talking about, like on their wall and stuff. One of my cousins, like, almost covered his whole wall with those posters. It's just been with me since, you know, I'll tell you how young I am. My first time really reading La Duma a lot is actually with the online side, because as I started watching soccer more religiously, I would read all of these stories about local football online, because I'm not really, millennials don't really be buying newspapers like that. I'll be honest with you guys.
Yeah, you're right, bro.
But yeah, we celebrate 24 years. Happy birthday, Sokala Duma, the company which has hired me and the company that allowed me to have this fantastic show, with two of my favorite players ever. also, just a fun piece of information about this show, for those of you who are listening, we don't actually talk about much about the formation of this show, but one, it was Sean who pitched this show to La Duma, and then La Duma had me pitch the show to Teco, which, you know, it's weird now, we have this working understanding, but back then, dude, I was bricks. Let me tell you something. Just like being like, hey, pitch an hour podcast to former Bafana star Teko Modise. I was like, damn, guys.
I think it was the coffee. I took Teko out for coffee. I think I melted his heart in that coffee. So, that's how he convinced them.
Sean.
Wish I had one of those coffees right now. I ain't gonna lie. All right, we start off the show with pole position. Pole position is where we ask our readers and listeners a question on our Facebook. We also present it to the Supporters Club, who I'm in direct communication with. This week, we thought we'd ask about this TTM situation, because we've spoken about it at great length on this show, so much so that I almost feel like we're going to scoot past the story pretty quickly. But, you know, they recently changed owners. There's, of course, been issues with paying players and all of that. We know the nuts and bolts of the situation. But we asked on Facebook, is the PSL partly at fault for this TTM situation, how it's played out, you know, with regards to the fact that they, of course, had to give them the thumbs up for the ownership change from Bidvest Wits. Here's what you guys had to say. This is a pole position.
I don't think so. We have to blame PSL because of TTM situation. They bought this team when they bought Bidvest. He knows that he's going to spend a lot of money because of traveling, hotels, and then he had to pay players also.
TTM should have themselves to blame.
The situation at TTM, we cannot blame the PSL, as the seller and the buyer, they had their negotiations without the PSL. The PSL only got involved to approve the sale. So I think we cannot blame the PSL at all.
And there you guys have it. You know, interesting word from the supporters. I think for the most part, split down the middle here. But I would argue the PSL is at least partly at fault. I mean, now we have this ownership change. Pharmaceutical businessman Abraham Sello has acquired TTM. He plans to relocate the club and the players from Tohoyandu to Polokwane. It's not the largest move, but still very inconvenient. And it just kind of, it's just another chapter in this TTM story that's been unfolding since the start of the season. So, you know, initial reactions here, are you still worried about TTM as a club? Do you think that this was necessary? What are your reactions to this ownership change?
Yeah, Slu, yes, I'm still worried for TTM as a club, without a doubt. But yes, this was necessary. is this probably the shortest someone's ever owned a club? I mean, we must check it up as well. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And yes, the PSL for sure is partly to blame. Not fully, but partly. I don't know if there's enough due diligence done in terms of the financial well-being of the previous owners of TTM. And I hope there has been due diligence done on the new owner of the TTM. So, but I mean, you've got to put yourself in these players' shoes, man. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, people have relocated families. They've changed schools for the kids. And now all of a sudden they're going to go to Polokwane and start all over again and not knowing if you're going to be surviving in the PSL this season. And this is where, you know, people look at the glamour of being a professional footballer or professional sportsman, and this is where it can get quite nasty, and you see the other side of being a professional sportsman where you've got to deal with this sort of stuff. There's not many Teko Madises out there, you know, where it's in terms of his football career where, okay, it hasn't always been plain sailing, but it's he's been at one club because he's been a bloody good player and with good owners, thank God. And there's probably never been issues with his pay, and you go to TTM and you look at the players like this and you just wonder, like, oh man, like, how do you bounce back? So I hope there's some big personalities in that squad where they're just going to pull their socks off and for their sake hope they survive and start afresh next season, you know. But look, in essence, they had to change ownership. I'm glad they have. I hope PSL has done their due diligence on the new owners. And yeah, fingers crossed they do well.
Deco, what are your thoughts over here? It's an interesting situation because it's, again, only time will tell, right?
Of course, Lou. You know, for me, Lou, I'd say like I worry for the players. The reason being is, you know, ever since TTM took over, ever since TTM bought the status, every week there's news about TTM. And not positive news, and from that you could see the effect of those on the pitch. You know, TTM has been struggling on the pitch because also it's struggling off the pitch as well. You know, I think that also disturbs the players, and now this is happening as well. So this is just a continuation of what's been happening from the beginning, and you wonder why the team is not getting good results. You know, and at this stage, you would even wonder if there's any good player that wants to go and play for TTM. So for me, if they actually do survive relegation, they're still in the PSL and they come next season, even with the new owners, you know, for me, I would say, you know, I'll take my head off for TTM players. But the thing is also, Slu, is my thing is with the PSL as well. I think the former owner of TTM, I think he was being screened. Let's say the PSL did the right things. They followed all the regulations that needs to follow for a person to buy the team and also for a person to sell the team as well. But my question is now, because of this now, it has happened, and I'm sure the PSL is also learning from maybe the mistake that have done as well in this transition as well. So now they're looking at the players, because I promise you there's going to be cases as well that goes to the PSL for players to be paid off, because there's still the case of Obamanyisa that is still pending as well. So what's going to happen with that case when TTM is actually sold the team?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many issues that are surrounding TTM and the players as well. So I just hope that with this situation, with this bad situation that is going on right now at TTM, I think PSL will finally now realize that, you know, the assets are the players. And if somebody is getting into this business for fame or for wrong reasons, they shouldn't allow them to come into this business at all, because of now they there's families now that are being broken up now. There's uncertainties in so many families and so many footballers as well, and as well as we always, PSL always drive this image of how the PSL needs to be locked down, the PSL needs to be run. We're one of the best leagues in the continent. And with that statement on its own, we can't be doing such mistakes of not screening enough people to advise the team, you know, not being able to protect the players, which are the assets as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes a problem. And if this is allowed, we will see so many teams doing that. Because for me, I don't want to be controversial and come out and say, yeah, but this guy knew exactly what he was going to do. Maybe he didn't. Maybe things weren't great after he bought the team. I don't know. But my problem is the PSL should be, you know, on the lookout of such things going forward, because we want to see We want to see players having jobs. We want to see players performing on the pitch. That's their job. And we want team owners as well to be open enough and buy teams because they can afford. And, you know, I'm sure there's a method that they check whether the team owner can be able to pay the players for the whole year if there's something happens. And I think also with the TTM situation, I think maybe his accounts were good. Maybe his accounts were right. Now that there's a new team owner, I just hope that he's a football person. You know, sometimes
he's a doctor, bro.
See now. Yeah, but you can still be a doctor and be a football person.
I hope so.
You can still be a businessman and still be a football person.
Sure.
You know, I think Petrus needs to change that narrative that you know, you can still be a businessman and know football.
Yes.
And do proper football decisions and I think we should learn from that
Or Teko, you're right. Or if you're not a football person, have football people around you.
Exactly.
Do you know what I'm saying, bro?
I'll say this. From a money perspective, this Abraham Selo guy, if he's in pharmaceuticals, it's a pretty good space to be in, given everything that's going on.
Sure.
So hopefully he's got some stocks in a vaccine. That way his money is sorted for years and years.
Yeah.
He's coming. He hasn't really done an interview. PSL still has to actually approve this transaction, but they're expected to by the end of the week, giving him full control. And, you know, of course, TTM are struggling at the moment, but I think there's still plenty of time for a turnaround. Just look at Chiefs. So,
You
know, it should be interesting. I just hope that from my side, I hope that they really work on the club's image as well, just because I think since the whole Bidvest situation, everybody is rooting against TTM. Every time I see them play a big side, everybody is hoping they lose. And so I just hope that they do some real work in terms of, you know, just brand management, because even if they start doing great again, I don't think a lot of people will be happy about it, to be honest. You know, I think they should take a page out of Swallows' book. Swallows have come back into the league, and their interactions and stuff with PSL fans have made people want to support them. And I think TTM needs a bit of the same. Apart from being able to pay players and play well on the pitch, I think they gotta, you know, do some real work in terms of that brand again.
I agree. Teko, can I ask you a question? Just on Swallows there. If there were fans allowed in the stadiums, would they sell out stadiums? Do they have a big enough fan base?
I don't think they do have a big enough fan base, but the way that they're going, they're actually growing fans.
Yeah.
You know, because you should remember also there's Bidvest fans that are just looming around.
Sure.
So Swallows actually started gaining more fans, and not just because the interaction on the social media as well, it's because how they play. And they've surprised so many people as well. And I think this season with how they're performing, I think if there were fans on the pitch, I think they would benefit more on Swallows than most of the teams that are in the PSL. Because look at the whole teams, especially the ones that are your top four, your regular top fours. They're not very consistent at the moment, and Swallows being the newcomer, being the forceful ones, they are the top four. I think the fans, I think Swallows would have benefited more in terms of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as we move on, this next feature is going to be pre-recorded. Kurt Buckerfield is on leave at the moment. I hope he's enjoying his time off. And so in his place, I'm going to be speaking to Liam Becker, also another international news correspondent for Sokola Duma. We're going to be chatting about Chelsea sacking Lampard, hiring Tuchel, and also the another interesting story. So take a listen to that, and there's something else I want to chat to the gents about. All right, for international news, we are joined by Sokola Duma international news correspondent, Mr. Liam Becker. Liam, how are you doing today?
Hey, Steve, how's it going?
I'm doing well, I'm doing good, cannot complain. But some people who have been complaining recently are Chelsea fans, and in light of recent results and obviously that huge transfer expenditure they had last season, they've now sacked their coach Frank Lampard and hired Thomas Tuchel. Tell us more about this. First of all, your opinion on the matter in terms of, do you think that it was a call that needed to be made? And then also, your understanding of what Thomas Tuchel brings to this Chelsea side. So what was your initial reaction to the news?
Yeah, I think Frank Lampard can feel a little bit hard done by getting the sack. I think, you know, at a time when the club was under a transfer ban, and he did really well with them, got them Champions League qualified. They helped bring through a whole lot of like young players. And then this season, it really hasn't been given the time that deserved to try and turn the results around.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it was maybe just the pressure of, you know, I think it was upwards of £200 million that they spent. Do you think it was that pressure that caused Chelsea to sack him so soon?
I definitely think it played a part. You know, Chelsea are chairman, the president, Roman Abramovich, are both notorious for showing little patience. You know, it's a results first game for them. And for them to the club with the big signings, Timo Werner, Hakim Ziyech, Kai Havertz, the list goes on. They spent a lot of money. I think that Abramovich wasn't seeing the reward for that investment. That's why he decided to change his course of action and bring Tuchel in.
All right, and now let's look at the other side of the situation. I remember hearing that when Chelsea were looking for a replacement, when there was rumours Lampard was on the way out, that they were looking for a German speaker. There was very specific criteria for this new coach. So what made them pick Thomas Tuchel? We know him from Dortmund and PSG, but what makes him the right fit in their eyes for Chelsea?
I think he comes in with a lot of experience. I think, as you touched on, the fact that he's German helps, and I think that has the acquisitions of Havertz and Werner before, two of the most promising players in Europe, both German internationals, they were brought in, and I think the German coach is now, not specifically for that, but with an eye on getting the most well. And I think the tactical side of the thing that he brings, I don't think Lampard did a bad job tactically, but Tuchel is just on a whole other level, and he's in a race. All the players at the club just to another level with his tactical insight and the analytics. You know, he's of that that new breed of German managers, your Jurgen Klopps, your Julian Nagelsmann, that just have such a high emphasis side of the game.
And now there's this greater question of how long will Tuchel now be given to change this side? He comes in halfway through the season. What do you think are his realistic expectations for the rest of this campaign?
That's the real question, isn't it? He's come in and the pressure's immediately on him as well to try and, improve on results. I think Chelsea can win the league this season. I don't think that should be a reasonable expectation. And I don't think the board has put that on him yet. But certainly to improve on results and at a bare minimum, secure Champions League qualification, which was done last season. Maybe to push closer to the top, but I don't think realistically that Chelsea are in consideration for the title this season.
Do you think that fans of Chelsea should be worried if this doesn't spark, you know, life into a guy like Werner or Havertz? Do you think that they'll start to worry if there's continued lack of form there? Because, again, Chelsea is a team. They can't focus all of their attention on just those two players. There's a lot of other players who can do the job for them. But do you think that that Havertz and Werner maybe would be under more pressure now than before?
It's possible. It's very possible. I think if you look at somebody like Werner in particular, there's already been comparisons to Fernando Torres and Andriy Shevchenko, who were two big money signings that Chelsea made in the past. It really didn't work out for them as much as was hoped. So I think there's already that pressure, another Torres or another Shevchenko for the club. And as you say, more so because they've now brought in a manager who the club believes will get the best out of them. So if that doesn't work, then yeah, I definitely think there's cause for concern. But both quality players, and I don't see them struggling for much longer. I think it's just a case of acclimatizing to the Premier League, and from there, it should be plain sailing.
It's a situation that we'll for sure keep our eyes on, because I mean Chelsea is of course one of the classic big four, you know, current big six, and as much as rival fans love to see them suffer a little bit. We don't like to see them struggle for too long. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Elsewhere, a huge story, which thank you for reminding me about this. I almost wasn't going to cover it. Barcelona on the verge of bankruptcy. It's funny, I read two headlines back to back this week on Twitter, and the first headline said Barcelona earned £700 million revenue, highest in the world. And then the next headline says Barcelona on the verge of bankruptcy. Now, of course, those two things can be true at the same time, but it's just a remarkable thing. What's the latest surrounding this situation?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. You know, that the reports are saying that they're carrying debts of 1.2 billion euros, which in a South African context is upwards of 20 billion rand, which is a ridiculous sum of money. And just for a club of that size, you know, even if it's just a report, but to be facing bankruptcy is it's something you would never have expected to have happened.
Yeah. And so, you know, apparently they haven't been paying Messi and teammates full wages. They owe Liverpool for Coutinho. Is this something that was a problem before coronavirus, or has this been an issue that developed over time?
It's something that's been coming a long time. I think the coronavirus obviously made it a lot worse, and it's brought it to light a lot sooner than it maybe would have. But there was a lot of mismanagement or on the previous board, and you'll remember that José María Bartomeu and the whole board stepped down. And I mean, some of the they racked up massive loans. Some of the transfers they did, they're still paying, as you say, Liverpool for Coutinho. Over 100 million in players, some of whom aren't even at the club anymore, just to the poor business that was done. And I think it's finally catching up with them.
And, you know, I have to ask this question because it was the first thing that came to my mind. Do you think that maybe they've made a mistake not selling Messi in the last window and perhaps making up a lot of that money back?
It's a difficult one. Messi is obviously the highest paid player in the world, and it's a big cost to the club to keep him there. But at the same time, he brings in a lot of revenue to the club, and of course a lot of the clubs on, which is the big draw. Whether they can keep him into the future on his wages, given their financial situation, is another story, but Messi would be a bigger loss than selling him to try and rectify the accounts in the short term.
Being an adult means that I've been introduced to concepts that I didn't even know existed, and one of those is being too big to fail. You know, an institution being too large, employing too many people to collapse. You know, same can happen in government, it can happen in big business, and I feel like Barcelona probably fits into that category. Would you agree that Barcelona it won't like break down completely? This is just a huge hiccup that they have to get past, or do you think that it's very much possible that we see a giant collapse?
I fully agree. They, you know, the first impression is that they really are too big to fail. I mean, Barcelona is one of the true superpowers in football. The financial problem, that it really is possible that unless this is being sensationalized, unless he's then if they aren't able to settle their debts, then the club could go insolvent. The club could be declared bankrupt, and you know, then there's a big problem. But I don't know if that's possible. I can't get my head around the idea that that could happen. It would be catastrophic for Spanish football, for La Liga, and I don't see it happening. One way or another, I think this will be rectified shortly.
Well, it should be an interesting one. Of course, these things, it can't be too long until we find out how they fix the situation, how they fix the problem. But those people that they owe are still going to want their money next year, so they can't delay it for too much longer, I suppose. But thank you very much, Liam, for joining us on the show this week, and hope you have a great week further as the weekend rolls around. But thank you very much for joining us on the show in place of Kurt Buckerfield.
Salute. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that was international news. Real quick, before we move on to these PSL reactions, there's a story that Clint actually sent us, which is an interesting quote from Zlatan. I don't know when this quote is from, but he's talking about meeting Steve Pienaar for the first time at Ajax Amsterdam at their training ground. I won't get into the entire quote. It's a long story, but basically, so Zlatan was going to be on the same side as Pienaar, and he speaks to the coach. He's like, I think, you got the maths wrong today, coach, with 10. You picked the ball boy over there to play with us. And the guy had to tell him, like, no, Zlatan, you know, this dude, he's from South Africa. He's our number 10. And then Ibrahimovic ends up saying that, Pinar was the best player on the pitch. And he spoke specifically about a generation of the shortest players he has ever met, and how they still do well and retire well despite their short heights, which is an interesting thing. I'd love to get your guys' perspective on that, because football is one of those things where it's like you don't have to be the biggest and strongest, and of course Zlatan is one of the biggest and strongest. What do you make of that quote? You know, it's funny for us knowing Pinar and how well he's played, the idea that Zlatan would look at him and go, get the ball boy off this pitch.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I mean, it's Pinar is one of the best players, if not the best player I've ever played behind in a team, to be honest. But I would, you know what Zlatan's saying is not wrong, because he's not right, he's not wrong, but I think it's very position dependent. Like, you're not going to have a 6'4", a mobile midfielder like Pinar was. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to get a 5'1" central defender. So I think it's all very position dependent. But yes, I mean, you look at Lionel Messi, you look at Dennis Wise back in the day, who was tiny. These guys were tiny, have made millions and millions, become one of the best players in the world. Gianluca Vialli, a good example as well. So it's, I mean, obviously you don't have to be massive to play the game at a professional level, but it's also how big your personality is. And it just so happens that Zlatan has both. He has size and probably the biggest personality in the game. That's why we love him. Or that's why we love to hate him. I don't know.
That's why I love him.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably come up against some fairly lanky midfielders in your time. What do you think of? Do you think it is something that Zlatan, you know, should be surprised by, this idea of all these tiny men dominating the field for his career?
Look, I think Sean put it very well. I think it's position dominated, because look, when you're a tiny midfielder, the expectations are, you need to be very mobile, you need to be very creative, you need to be quick, and because if you're small and all that type of stuff. And then now, he's been now coming into Ajax, where at the time, or even till today, you know, the emphasis is play beautiful football. And look at Zlatan's height. He's the guy that, you know, he's the only striker that I know of that is very tall, very big, but still very skillful. And of course, you question that. I don't think it was a disrespect from Zlatan. I think also with us in the country, maybe at some point I've questioned maybe the player without even seeing him kicking the ball. And it's not because of disrespect. Because if I see a player coming into my team and is very short and then they say he's a winger, in my mind immediately, he has to be quick. He has to be quick, you know. And if he's a center midfielder that is tall, he needs to be very aggressive. You know, I think it's also position dependent, but also we know how Steve played and what he brought into any team that he played for. His creativity, I think it's one of the most creative players. And in South Africa as well, we have that in abundance. You know, small players that are very, very creative. I think we're given that. But also to survive overseas is something else. And we do have now players. I don't think also, you know, shifting a little bit, I think also with Pesce, I don't think Pesce will play as a striker all his life in Europe. I think he will be turned into a different position because of his height, because of how quick he is. And maybe he might find a coach that will bring the best out of him, or maybe change him a little bit and so that he can sustain his career overseas. Because as a striker, with that height, you need to be your Sergio Aguero's.
Yeah.
You need to be scoring goals every week. You need to be scoring goals, different goals every time. And it's very rare to find a striker that's short, that is very powerful. And with Pesce as well, with his quickness, yes, he might start playing maybe as a 10 or maybe as an attacking midfielder. And of course, we have a problem with that. You know, we have an opinion about that, but I understand that from a technical point of view, or and the EPL football is played differently depending on which team you play for. You know, sometimes you bypass the midfield because you've got two strikers that they need to be fed the ball, and then you bounce off your player from the second ball. Then you have your Man City that builds the ball, that the team moves with the ball, irrespective of your height. You know, nobody kicks the ball forward and hope for the best. So I think it's all depending on what kind of position you play.
Yeah, you mentioned Percy. I'd love to see him deployed as a false nine, but it's because I'm a big fan of that system when Barca introduced it with Messi dropping as a false nine and how it changed their attack. You know, I'm not calling Percy a Messi, but similar build and stature. So it would be cool to see Percy deployed there.
Chief, slow, please. Don't jinx Percy. Everybody that has been said the next Messi, they never make it. Please.
No next Messi's over here. I ain't gonna front.
But I mean, let's also look local. You look at someone like Benedict Vilakazi. How small was he, Teko?
Yeah. He was very small.
Yeah, there's a great example, you know.
He was very small.
And quality.
That's another one. And, you know, speaking of Benedict Vilakazi, his old team is who we start with when we look at these PSL reactions. They drew, Paris drew 1-1 with TS Galaxy. Pirates not in the best run of form at the moment, and we're going to get into the discussion about Zimbabwe a little bit later on, but in terms of the play, you know, since the MTN 8, it really hasn't looked like Pirates have found a their footing properly. I don't know if you guys are seeing anything on the pitch that I'm not seeing, but what's your reaction to this result? TS Galaxy also not in the best form. I think a lot of people would have expected Pirates to win.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a great result for TS Galaxy. Take nothing away from that. I don't have much of a problem with the midfield of Pirates. I think they're doing well. They're getting the ball forward quick enough to the front three, front four, but there's nothing up front. The lack of goals is so concerning. But you look at the defense as well. I'm not convinced of the defense. I think Shoshua hasn't stepped up to the plate just yet. Mm. And there's no disrespect to him. He's a quality player. I think we need a bit more from him. Interesting to see that he wasn't the captain against Galaxy, was he? So that was an interesting one. But yeah, you've got a lot of injuries as well up front for Pirates. But I think midfield still quality, but just a lack of goal scoring in general. And that has to improve. And yeah, there are injuries. Yes, granted. But you're a big team. You should have more depth. And you should be getting more points.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the goal scoring, 15 goals scored in 14 matches. It's the worst in the top five, by the way.
Wow.
So, you know, Teko, what do you make of Pirates? Do you think that maybe everybody got very excited by the end of the trophy drought and maybe that excitement might start to fade if they look at recent performances in the league?
To be honest, I was also one of the guys that were excited for Orlando Pirates to win the trophy because of how they assembled the team. I think it was expected. I think they've assembled the team with those type of things in their mind to start winning trophies. And I think for me, it was like, okay, finally now, you know, this maybe might be a wake-up call to actually make them realize what type of team they have. That was me after they won that trophy as well. So looking at the performance after that, I think when Pirates was on form last season, it was because Mango was on form. They had a link up. They had somebody that was banging in goals. And when he was on the pitch, you know, the team have maybe had like 80% chance of winning the game. You know, the belief was high up there. And looking at this season as well, you know, they haven't found that person. Yes, La Pasta was playing very well, but he wasn't your typical goal scorer. You know, he was troubling the defenders and all that type of stuff. And also, looking at also the new players that came into the team, they haven't gelled properly. Yeah. I don't think there's a new guy that was signed this season for Orlando Pirates that is playing well. I think they're still trying to adjust to playing for Orlando Pirates. And here's the thing with playing for Orlando Pirates. You can't, lucky for most of them, there's no fans. You can't get away with average performance at Orlando Pirates, and you're looking at the team right now. They're not on form. They're not doing very well. They're not very consistent. they should look at themselves and realize how lucky they are, because there's no fans, there's nobody that is being booed. You know, there's the pressure, yes, is there, but it's not as big as it should be because of the fans are not there. But yet again, looking at the whole Pirates setup as well, I haven't been convinced with their defense even from last season.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, with Tyson being there, I thought, okay, cool. Now they do have some kind of a leader that will actually be able to marshal that. But also there's the lack of consistency, and I think also still trying to adjust to playing for the big team like Carolina Pirates, you know. And you're looking at the midfield. I think there's a lot of confusion there. I don't wanna piss people off, but I'm an analyst, so I'll say the way I see it. I think there's a lot of confusion there in the midfield for a lot of parts. They always try to play Ben Mutsuari and Monare and Makaringi.
Mm.
And with that, probably maybe this is the best midfield that they have. And with that also, I don't see that combination working, because for me is I look at them and I see one player that can be doing all three things that they're doing. Because you've got your Ben Mutsuari, you've got Monare, that initially for them their job is to protect the defense, and you've got Makaringe, who's very talented. He if you look at his numbers are shocking, dude.
Struggling, like, yeah.
Yeah, like he's playing so many games, no assists, no goals.
Mm.
You know, with the numbers that with the games that he plays, you know, he should be there, because he's very creative, he's very talented, and I think those are the kind of conversations that you should be having before you even get to strikers. You know, you're looking at the quality of the midfield that you have. You've got your Lodge, you've got your Pule. You're expecting goals from there. If you want to win the league, you don't win the league because of you've got a top goal scorer that's got 15 goals. You win the league because the goals are being contributed all over the pitch. You look at how they're conceding goals. They're conceding goals the same way. If the ball goes to the side, if a striker at that plays against Milano Pirates move to the side and combine, there's a problem inside the box. All the time, there's always a problem inside the box, and I think, you know, coming to weekend's game, it's gonna be a problem. But also, it's I think there's a lot of past players. This is, they need to understand that this is not a rebuilding phase. This is a team that is assembled to win the league, nothing else. And I think once they realize that, you know, they should make the coach's job easier, because also bear in mind that they struggle with the strikers. Yes, they've got injuries off form. Yes. But you do have players that need to step up and take responsibility. And for me, I think Pirates have quality players that can do so. Hoto at Vetsi was scoring goals. He's not at Orlando Pirates. You've got Jugo Manji was scoring goals. He was not at Orlando Pirates. You've got Lorch that's trying to still find his form back. You've got Pule that tries every game that he plays. You've got Makaringa that tries every game that he plays. You've got Ben Mutsuari, who's... you can't mention Orlando Pirates' lineup without mentioning him. Yes, he's doing a great job, but also I think Azimbar should look at the team and reform his philosophy or his playing style, because I don't think many guys are performing well under the system that they play.
But they definitely have the personnel required to do it. And you mentioned the derby this weekend. Chiefs, they had a draw against Baroka. I think most people in the league wouldn't be too mad at a draw against Baroka. They're kind of a tricky side. They've been a tricky side, but this season in particular, it's not easy to get a result against them. And for Chiefs, it still means 5 games unbeaten. The last time they lost was against Maritzburg. And it means that they remain in the top 8. They're currently in 7th. What did you make of the draw and the results, Deco? You spoke off air about this, but starting with you, Sean, what do you think of Chiefs' current run of form?
Yeah, you know, I see you mentioned that any team would be happy to get a draw against Baroka. I mean, I must disagree. If you count as a Chiefs, you cannot be drawing against Baroka, especially at home. I think it was. We spoke about it at length before the podcast. And I'll let Tekel go on about it a bit more, what he noticed. He obviously notices a lot more than us, because I think Tekel was actually at the game. But yeah, it's just, it's very, we spoke about how the momentum was with Chiefs and how I thought surely it was going to be another Chiefs got a win. And again, you know, you've got players, you know, okay, Cardoso at six. Is he a six? He's doing okay. He's doing well, but it's just, it's not the Chiefs we want to see. There's something missing massively. Nurkovic brings something else for sure. He's such a welcome back to the squad, but it's just, it's not okay. It's Chiefs against Baraka should be 3 points for Chiefs all the way. So, yeah, five games unbeaten. Cool. It's okay. But I must disagree, Slew, that you cannot be drawing against teams like Baraka.
Okay, wait. Let me ask you this rather than say before this run of form that they're on now, the 5 games unbeaten. Say when they were really struggling for form, would Chiefs have not taken a 1-1 draw against Baraka, considering some of those results they were?
Listen to what you're saying. Listen, Kaizer Chiefs. This is not Amazulu. This is Kaizer Chiefs. You know what I'm saying? Every game is a home game for Kaizer Chiefs. So, yes, they were going through probably a slump, and a lot of teams do. We can talk about Man United. Would they be happy with a 1-1 draw against Sheffield United? No. You've got to win those games. And
I'm sure they lost.
I don't know. I'm just saying. So I use the Sheffield United example. But, I mean, it's the same context. Every game, if you put on, like take on nose for Pirates, you put on that jersey for a big team like that, it's 3 points. Otherwise, you're shit. There's no coming back from that.
Like you were mentioning, you know, you saw that Gavin just didn't have some of the right pieces in that side. What did you see on that pitch?
Look, I had an opportunity and the luck to do most of the Chiefs games. And I started to understand Gavin's frustrations as well. But I looked at the team. They do have the right formation. They do have the structured plan. But sometimes the execution is not there. I think with just Nurkovic on the pitch trying to solve the goal scoring problem for Kaizer Chiefs, him alone I think is not enough, especially for a big team like Kaizer Chiefs. Yes, you look at the whole team. You can't speak about Kaizer Chiefs and not speak about the young boy Ngobo. He's doing very, very well. It looks like the boy is carrying the team. It's not enough. People are saying he's too young to carry the team. Hey, guys, if he's talented, leave him. Let him carry the team. Let him play the way that he plays. You know, I think he's bringing something fresh into the team. He's very creative, but he's too young. You can see even the mistakes that he does, that he's young. This is his first season, by the way. And with drawing against Baraka, for me, it was surprising because I saw how they played against Thelis. I was there, you know, when I did my prediction, I was like, because Chiefs has to win this because of, they didn't win against Thelis because of certain aspects of the game, you know, and they played against Thelis. Thelis not far away from Baraka in terms of how they play. They play on transition. Baraka is very quick. They'll never, you know, kill you with ball position, but once you lose the ball, they're very, very dangerous. And it's something that I saw. And look at how they found space just behind your Matohos with ease because of the speed that they had.
Yeah.
You know, and also it's what's important as well is, look, when you play against a team that relies on transition, relies on speed, you've got one thing to do as a team. Keep the ball. Protect the ball. Because these guys are only going to be dangerous when you lose the ball. So therefore, you need to understand the areas where you're at when you lose the ball. You know the type of danger that you have. Your rest defense always should be alert. And with Kaizer Chiefs, look, man, look at the goal they conceded. From the goalkeeper, my friend, they one ball up, strikers, flick, behind the defense, goal. You can't be conceding goals like that because you can see the ball 4 meters, 40 yards away. It's coming. You need to, then you need to smell the danger. Then you need to be alert, you know, and those are the type of things that the coach can coach.
It's funny you mentioned that. Actually, come to think of it, and we will get to this shortly with the derby preview, but that's the type of goal that they should be very terrified when it comes to Pirates, because you mentioned last week they play on the break very quick. So if you can't track that ball coming from defense to attack that fast, you're in trouble against a team like the Buccaneers. But we will get there very shortly. Real quick, last night's crazy game. If you were watching that match, you might have thought Leopards had the chance to actually hand Sundowns their first league defeat of this campaign. But no, there's a phrase that an American sportscaster once used that I love, which is snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Basically, when you have every opportunity to win, everything on the plate, you have a lead against Sundowns. They get a red card. Sure, they equalized just before that, but they get a red card. And still, you somehow let that point slip. It would have been the result of the season for Leopards. Mm. But unfortunately, they fall. Shalulile comes back. And we can't be mad at the results. It is what it is. Like, Leopards had the chance. They let it go. What was your reaction to this one, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, any team to get 3 points in Toyando is a hell of a feat. But, you know, so at the end of the season, the coaches will be looking back. And they'll be looking at the results, and it's these grinds, it's these 2-1 victories away. Again, you know, these horrible trips that you do to Toyando, to Venda, which is, Teko knows, I know, it's the worst trip of the season. Those are the results that win you the league. Mm-hmm. And this is what separates Sundowns from the rest of the teams, are results like this. Shalulile was absolutely phenomenal. Great signing. That's all I can say. I mean, this is what Sundowns are about.
Mm. Deco, what was your reaction? I mean, Shalulile's performance, it genuinely looked like he had extra in the tank compared to other people on that pitch last night.
No, Shalulile, my friend, I think he went to Toyando jogging. I don't think he traveled. That boy doesn't get tired for some reason. But I think that's his quality. You know, he possesses a different quality than most of the players on the team, and that helps, you know, relieve the stress of the team, because I understand as well that how Sundowns came back to win the game, but Black Leopards played very well. You know, the certain patches of the game where I thought Sundowns are going to lose, you know, They were getting to goal scoring areas. Onyango pulled a couple of saves, and there was a problem at the centre back after that. You know, even before the red card. If you look at the red card, that was a clear goal scoring opportunity. You know, it's gonna be, I'm sure, because I don't know, maybe Onyango might have pulled a save, but it was a clear goal scoring opportunity, and because of that, you see the result. I mean, you see the reason why the foul was caused, because it was, you know, Black Leopards found it very easy to get behind Mamelodi Sundowns' defense. And with that, they still continued still. You know, they found chances. And for me, I feel like there were certain subs that, besides the injuries, there were certain subs that Black Leopards did that affected the game negatively. Because then Mamelodi Sundowns put on their subs. And then the reason why they put on their subs, because Leopards was dominating the midfield. They were just bypassing the midfield. You know, it was a problem for Mamelodi Sundowns to contain that. But yet again, Mamelodi Sundowns started pressing, you know, Black Leopards. But you could see the intention. You know, what I liked about Sundowns was the mentality of, we're not going to settle for a draw. We're 10 men down, we're not going to settle for a draw. We want to try and win this game. You know, they started creating chances, you know. And with Serinho, you know, he nearly won them the game. But yet again, you know, Shalulile was there, and Shalulile never stopped running. You know, for me, as the Black Leopards, is you playing against a team that is 10 men down. You want to win the game. You feel like you want to win the game. The game tells you that you're in a position to win the game. Why are you still having four defenders in the back four?
Mm.
You know, for me, it's just that it's different types of coaching, different types of seeing the game. For me, is, you can see there's a problem at Sundowns' defense, for the fact that they took Klompo Kakana to put him as a center back, put him the second striker, my friend. You know, put a always have those extra numbers of threat, because Sundowns at some point they were just kicking the ball forward because of the pressure that was there. But also the fighting spirit of Sundowns. It comes back to how to win. You know exactly that sometimes you need to grind the results. You don't have to play well. And because of it, the DNA and the system says that you know, every game is important. Every 3 points is important. We're not going to settle for a draw unless we have to. And yesterday's game, I think it was a game to for Mamelodi Sundowns to lose, and then they snatched it at the end. You know, the way that they scored. I mean, four defenders still against two. And for me, I've said this so many times against when I speak about Black Leopards. Black Leopards, they don't have the defense. They don't have the defense, and I think it's a problem that any coach that gets to Black Leopards because of that, they're conceding goals every f-ing single game.
This is true. This is true. You know? And as we're about to dive into the Soweto Derby preview, I just want to dive into some this week in football history.
Today we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
So this week back in 1937, the very rare feat of all the home sides going undefeated in all 35 FA Cup and Football League matches took place. Don't ask me if and when that ever happened again. I definitely know, but don't ask me right now. Back in 2002 this week, former FIFA World Player of the Year George Weah ended his 19-year international career as Liberia bowed out of the African Cup of Nations. Another one of those situations where a great player comes from a country that's perhaps too small to compete at the highest level. I think another guy like Aubameyang is a good example of that, where it's like, man, you know, as good as you are, you're not going to lead Liberia to an AFCON trophy. Sticking with AFCON, this week back in 2010, Egypt won the Cup of Nations with a record 19th consecutive unbeaten match in the tournament, a streak that they dated back to 2004. And just as I'm saying this is very rare, but as I'm saying it, worst deja vu. I'm pretty sure this time last year, I had the exact same fact. Well, it is what it is.
It's possible, Slu. You're going crazy.
That's wild. It's funny because I don't even have it in my mind that the car wash has been around that long, but it has.
But it has. It has, and we're going nowhere.
We move on to this Soweto Derby preview. In the center of the La Duma paper, it says, who's brave enough? So I want to ask you guys, who do you guys think will be the key factor in this derby? In the paper, they're talking about is Lorch the trump card. Will Ngobo steal the show? Nurkovic is back. Are you happy with Tyson in defense? We've spoken about these two sides, but who do you think is the key factor, come Saturday?
Look, I'm going to give you my thoughts of the results as well. I think any team that is coming up against Chiefs exactly like last season are going to single out Nurkovic. That's just my opinion. It's going to be a 1-1 draw without a doubt. I'll put my house on it.
Will you put the house on
it? I'll put my house on it.
You have a child, it's right?
I'll put my house on it.
Looking at that Pirates defense, is there anybody who you think is up to the challenge? You think Tyson could put Nurkovic in his pocket?
Look, I think the Pirates defense is not where it should be. We spoke about it slightly earlier. Nyauza is not a right back, is he? So he's a central defender. He's playing right back. They're missing someone like Abel Mabaso, who's out injured. I've been very impressed with Sam. Don't get me wrong. I think he got in the score sheet as well during the week. I like how he goes forward. But they're going to have to contain Nurkovic. Whether Tyson is the man to do it, I don't know. He hasn't impressed me so far. If Happy's up to the challenge, I think Jerry will be singled out to take him on, to be honest. I'm going for... And I don't disagree with what the fans are saying in terms of Lorch. Could this be his time to shine? He has shown promise in the previous games for sure. We know he's a quality player, and now it's time for him to step up to the plate. So I'm going to give a Lorch goal, Nurkovic goal, 1-1 draw.
Ooh, very specific. I like that. All right. Teko, who do you think will be the key factor here? Who do you think is going to show up on the day?
Hey, this one's tough. I'd say for me, Kaizer Chiefs, I think Akpe would be the guy that will be, for me, will be
the difference.
the difference in terms of winning or losing the game. Looking at how Kaizer Chiefs defense is, and looking at how Orlando Pirates attack, and they come with speed, they come with combination play. It's very difficult to defend against them. You have to work harder. And with Nukovic, it's just there's no diversity in terms of how Kaizer Chiefs attack. It's just one way. You put a little bit of pressure there, they kick the ball to Nukovic. He has to do whatever he has to do to contain the ball and link up with the players. So that's a straightforward play. It's easy to defend that. It's not like Kaizer Chiefs from last season where Lebo Manyama will come in and create those goals, where there's also another problem, which is Kama on the other side, even though he wasn't scoring so many goals, but there were a lot of problems as well. So with Kaizer Chiefs, I think it's easy to defend one person when there's no other threat somewhere else. So I think with Orlando Pirates defense, I think they will be able to contain Nukovic. He might score, but they will be able to contain him. There's not going to be a battle on the midfield because we know Pirates has got better midfielders than Kaizer Chiefs. But I think it's going to be one of those games where it's going to be like a long, boring f***ing draw.
We always, you know, when it comes to these sorts of derbies, it always feels like we predict draws.
Yeah.
No, but Slu, look at the teams how they play. I know for sure that Orlando Pirates will dominate the game. They'll dominate the ball because of the type of players that they have. But I know for a fact that because they don't have a striker, they don't have a threat up front, they will never get more opportunities to actually get there and be able to score goals. They might score maybe via set piece or, you know, one of those solo efforts. That's why we can say Lodge, because we're expecting him to be, you know, taking on somebody or, you know, one of those brilliant moments. But other than that, with derbies, it's very rare to find a team goal. It's always about somebody, you know, showing up, one person showing up. It's hardly a team shows up. That's how the derbies are.
Absolutely. Let me just finish that. Sorry, but I think if Pirates had Mangola, Pasa, Mabasa back, I think Pirates victory all the way, but they don't. So that's why I'm going for my draw.
You know, it is interesting that Deco picks Akpeyi as the difference maker, because if we rewind back to last season, this fixture took place in Feb, and it was, of course, Akpeyi's heroics that sold the show here. He, of course, walked away with the Man of the Match award.
Yes, sir.
As everybody was trying to say, is it Gune or Akpeyi? And he kind of stamped his authority in that match specifically. So hopefully they'll have another show-out performance from Akpeyi like last year. Another big fixture this weekend, SuperSport United versus Swallows, as we go through the weekend predictions. Who do you see winning this one? Second versus third. Whoever wins, if one of them does win, will draw level with Sundowns. A draw sees them 2 points behind, but a huge match here for both sides. Sean, who do you see winning?
Yeah, I don't want to say a draw, but I think it is going to be a draw. So I'll pick one. I think Teko said off air earlier how SuperSport seemed to not pitch up for the big events, or maybe not have too much big match tempering. This is a massive game. This is a 6-pointer. I think we're going to see an upset here. I think we're going to see a Swallows win.
Swallows win. Interesting. Interesting. Teko, who do you see taking it?
I want Swallows to win, because Swallows, at least, it's one of those teams that brings they bring like good talking points into the league, you know, whenever they're doing well. And I think with how Swallows plays, it's not far off, especially in the midfield, how SuperSport plays, because so Swallows, there's a lot of energy in the midfield. SuperSport, yes, there is, but you're relying more on Mbule to be more creative, and he's the guy that doesn't finish the games. You know, he's unpredictable. He shows up on one game, and then he disappeared for two, and then he comes back again, and he's very, very talented. But I think for me, Swallows will win it. But it's going to be a very interesting game. You know, it's going to be a battle of Hrobla and that center back. I don't know what's his name. I think it's Ngobo or something like that.
Yes, good
player.
I think
he's very, very good. He's very underrated, but he's very, very good. He's good on the ball. You know, Ariely is good as well. He reads the game very well. So I think it's going to be one of those tests. And if they could contain the speedy Shalulile, They in for a surprise, because Brigitte Hobler, his movements are very smart, are very calculative, and for me it will be one of those tests, especially for Swallows defense. But I think for me, every game, I think the bigger the game, I think Swallows grows, and I think it's one of those games as well that will see Swallows, you know, stamping their authority and actually winning the game.
And in the last fixture that we have to predict, Sundowns versus Chippa, I wonder what you guys are going to predict for this one.
Damn. Convincing Sundowns win. I think they're on a roll from the victory against Leopards. It'll be interesting to see if Anthony Lafour is allowed to play against Sundowns, because I think he's on loan to Chippa. That'll be interesting. Yeah, but a convincing Sundowns win for me.
I need to, if we ever start selling merch for the car wash, convincing Sundowns win has to be one of the shirts that we have.
Especially from Sean.
Sean, convincing Sundowns.
I'm usually right.
What do you see happening in this one?
I think Sundowns will win. They're playing against a side that, yes, there's new energy in, but Sundowns know how to win. And I think this victory, yesterday's victory, has bring back the belief, because Sundowns won like 3 games without a win. So this victory like brought back the belief, and they're slowly getting their players back. Serena's coming back, you know, Klompo Kakano, we saw him playing yesterday. But I think also they're going into this game having problems as well in the center back position. So that's going to be a problem as well. They need to deploy somebody else to play in that position as well. You know, still Kuti is out. They still like Sundowns has so many players out, and but because of how Sundowns is, there's high expectations still. People don't care who's injured or not. Sundowns are expected to win, and I think the players understand that. But I'm not sure if the new players actually understand the position they're in. But I think with playing against Chippa, I think it's a little bit ease, a little bit. It's not like you're going to play against Solano Pirates as well, where you're having a centre-back problem. So I think with Chippa, I think they might manage to do it, but it's going to be a Sundowns victory, irrespective.
There we have it. There's a lot of other stories that I wanted to cover this week, but I think we've obviously run out of time here. But, you know, I wanted to talk about Zimbabwe skating on thin ice. We can chat about that after the derby as well, I think. And then I wanted to talk about Hrobla and Gabuza, league's newest, deadliest duo. We can also talk about that next week, because we'll have seen them come up against Swallows, a big test. And also Shaba not being a part of Benny's AmaZulu plans. We might also see what happens with that story, but it is growing. There's insiders saying that he's not really fitting in with the team. Doesn't look like he's going to be at Isuzu very long.
Wow.
So we will chat about that next week. Because
Slu.
Yep, yep.
Slu, I just hope on the Shaba issue, I just hope it's not true, because this is what happens every season. Whenever there's a big player at the so-called small teams and he doesn't play, there's always been this story that the coach doesn't like the player or vice versa. They're fighting. Whatever. I hope it's not true, because this is the same story that's been recycled over the years. I just hope that Shaba's not playing because of maybe other reasons. Maybe, you know, the game that didn't demands other things that Shaba doesn't have. I hope
he's still
part of the plans for
AmaZulu.
For AmaZulu, because also with Shaba being there, you know, it was easy for AmaZulu as well to get other quality players to come into the team. People don't understand, when there's a certain player in this team, it makes it easy for other players to want to go there and actually be part of that, to actually play with them, because of he's an inspiration within the team. You know, he brings that positive energy into the team. So I just hope it's not true. If it is true, I think they can handle it a little bit better than the way that they are handling it right now, because of the sources, somebody saying this, somebody saying that. I think they need to handle, because also
Shaba, respect Shaba him as well, hey?
I think Shaba also deserves some respect.
There we go.
What he has done for South African football. So
thank
I just hope that if it is true, they need to handle it better.
Yeah, agreed.
We'll definitely dive into it next week. We'll also be past the deadline day, because the story itself kind of made it sound like Shaba might be going soon, but we haven't heard any whispers of any club chasing his signature or how much he would be valued for, or if he would want to leave. We don't know a lot of stuff about this story, but we will dive into it next week. You know, it's a journey, and a great way to take a journey is in a car.
Wow.
We have a guy who features a car every week.
Wow.
Sean, what do we have this week?
Thank you, Slu. horrific intro, but thank you. this week we look at Morocco Swallows goalkeeper Virgil Fries, who has a 2015 Audi S3. The 2015 Audi S3 brings high performance to the popular A3 lineup. It may not be a perfect road trip vehicle, but if you're looking for an engaging compact luxury sedan, the S3 is excellent. Just to look at some of the specs quickly, the engine is a 2-liter turbocharged. Transmission is a 7-speed S-tronic sequential gearbox, 18-inch alloy wheels, and 0-100 in 5 seconds. What we like about it, it's fantastic and advanced interior. The gearbox is very smart. It's a great engine and superior levels of grip. What we dislike is the price and the obvious Golf GTI and Golf R, which I actually prefer, to be honest. Anyway, coming in at a staggering 585,000 rand in 2015, it's a lot of money. But I give it an 8 out of 10. It's still a beautiful car.
All right. I mean, you know, Virgil, he's going to be driving out to Tshwane this weekend, so he has some nice comfortable wheels to get there in. One thing that he'll want in Tshwane is some motivation when he takes on Hrobler. So do we have a quote of the week for him?
We do. We spoke about this player earlier, Mr. Anthony Lefort, Chip United's new signing. He says, "What you lack in talent can be made up with desire, hustle, and giving 100% all the time."
Very nice. You know, it's kind of like your career, Sean. It's like, if you're not a good goalkeeper, as long as you push.
Be great. Be great in other areas.
Yeah. But that is how we draw the show to a close. This has been episode number 61 of The Car Wash. Whether you've been listening to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Mahigang 96.7 FM's Game Time, thank you very much for joining us on the show. I have been your host, Slu Paho. That has been Mr. Sean Roberts.
Thank you, Slu.
And that has been Mr. Teko Modise.
Thank you, Mr. Paho.
And we will see you all same time, same place next week. Peace.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the Car Wash on the SL Podcast. This is a Hlangana Car.